Next is the Parikram of Vrindavan on October 26, 1993.
I have from this book, Appreciating Vrindavan Dham by Mahanidhi Swami, who went through and looked for all the quotes just by Srila Prabhupada. Krishna book, chapter 18. Vrindavan is such a nice place. Flowers are always blooming, and there are even various kinds of decorated deer. Birds are chirping. Peacocks are crowing and dancing, and bees are humming. The cuckoos there sing in five kinds of tunes. The lakes of Vrindavan are surrounded by green grasses, and various kinds of lotus flowers bloom there, and the air blowing there carries the aromatic pollen of those lotus flowers. When the particles of water from the waves of the Yamuna, the lakes and the waterfalls touch the bodies of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they automatically felt a cooling effect. There are many waterfalls which are always pouring water. The sound is so sweet it covers the sound of the crickets. And because the water flows all over, the forest looks very green and beautiful. That was Krishna. That was Vrindavan when Krishna was here during his manifested pastimes. And we all know that this is the same Vrindavan. Its apparent rundown feature is actually, on the one hand, due to neglect of the residents of Vrindavan. Prabhupada compared Vrindavan to like a governor's house outside of his main place. In the United States, we have the president stays in the White House and he goes to this place called Camp David for his being alone or being on a vacation. So he's not always there, but they always keep it nice because they're waiting, he may come. So like that, Krishna, he comes regularly to this universe, and the people should keep Vrindavan very, very nice. It's his estate, but they don't. But there are other explanations why it's run down, such as that Yogamaya doesn't want to make it a very popular place where everybody flocks. Oh, this is where God came. And they'd ruin it in another way. So it's kept hidden just for those devotees who can see the secret unmanifest Vrindavan. We can't pretend that we do, but we know it's here at least. And we respect Vrindavan, worship Vrindavan, we pray to the trees, and we go on a holy parikram. So we hear these descriptions of beautiful Vrindavan with waterfalls and everything in the hope that someday, like with Brahma, the curtain will be lifted and we'll see the actual Vrindavan. Just one more, then we'll go on again. One devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, how can we understand that Vrindavan is Krishna's abode? There seems to be so much contamination in Vrindavan. Prabhupada says, this is because your senses are impure, but when your eyes are smeared with the salve of love, then you can see Vrindavan. Don't judge Vrindavan by the external manifestation. At another time, a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, why does Vrindavan now appear so dirty and unkept? He said, that ugliness here is Yogamaya. It is Krishna's covering. Vrindavan appears this way to drive away the atheists and impersonalists. For a devotee, this Vrindavan is as good as Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan. So somebody, you're working to make Vrindavan nice. You don't have to worry about this passage that it's supposed to be unnice. So the atheists won't come. At least make it kind of nice. So the devotees, they may not be atheists, but they like it to be nice. Vrindavan hides herself from the materialists. This earthly Vrindavan is a replica of Goloka Vrindavan, and therefore it's non-different. But because it's manifest in the material universe, the laws of material nature are working here. Okay, let's go on. Most of us come here on a pilgrimage. It may take us years to get here. And some come almost every year. So, it seems to me that when we come, it's not wrong to anticipate some important changes in our spiritual lives. And different years, different themes seem to occur as to what Vrindavan is doing to us and what we're seeking. In the recent years, for me, the meditation has been Vrindavan itself. and thoughts about living in Vrindavan, getting used to living in Vrindavan. But this year more, I've been thinking in terms of asking for direction in Vrindavan for my activities when I'm outside of Vrindavan. This is a typical preaching meditation that Prabhupada approved. So somehow or other, when we're in Vrindavan, there's a chance for more clarity, and we can dare to say a more communication with Krishna in the heart and with Srila Prabhupada in the holy, his holy places. So we ask for direction, and that will vary with each individual. You may be working on some anartha or some emptiness, or things are going all right, but you know you want to get deeper and you want some direction. So we can pray like that. And then, even if it's not something dramatic that occurs, something ought to occur during your visit. And then you have to do something too. We read how even Rupa Goswami, although Satyabhama appeared in a dream, he had to meditate deeply and think how to write his drama. So we should start thinking from our side and at some point feel that I think this is what Vrindavan is saying to me this year, and then we try to start to build on that and make some tangible plans that when we go back, how we're going to carry it out. This program, that program, all towards carrying out what we think we've learned. This is one way to look at it. It may occur to people in other ways also. But certainly Vrindavan is special for all of us. And such things can happen. According to ordinary experience, Vrindavan appears like an ordinary village. But in the eyes of elevated devotees, it is as good as the original Vrindavan in the spiritual world. With the eyes of love of Godhead, one can see Vrindavan's real identity as the place where Lord Krishna performed his pastimes with the cowherd boys and girls. The devotees who attain perfection in devotion, Siddhavasta, are blessed with the vision of divine Leela of Krishna and his associates, even while staying in these dhams in their present bodies. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs us that just as Krishna is worshipable, Krishna's place, Vrindavan, is also worshipable. Similarly, the paraphernalia in Vrindavan, the trees, roads, rivers, everything is worshipable. A pure devotee thus sings, Jaya Jaya Vrindavan, Vasi Yata Jan. All glories to the residents of Vrindavan. If one has a staunch devotional attitude, all these conclusions will be revealed in his heart. The glories of Krishna nobody can understand. Similarly, the land which is known as Vrindavan also has unlimited potency. When you go to Vrindavan, you will find unlimited potency of spiritual atmosphere still. If you go to Vrindavan, you will see so many saints and sages still there worshipping Vrindavan Dham. As Brajendra Nandana, Krishna is worshipable. His Dham Vrindavan is also worshipable. We shall be very much respectful toward Vrindavan Dham. Otherwise, we will be offender, dham aparad. So somehow, due to our jaundiced vision or ill luck, we don't see Vrindavan in a happy mood. We see opposition from the people or the creatures or the land. We make it physically sick or whatever. At that time, we have to tolerate such treatment, apparently rough treatment, and always be respectful, not be disrespectful. Otherwise, we can ruin everything. Another place, Prabhupada says that potential devotional service here is increased 100 times compared to places outside. But if you come here and make aparads, then the offense is increased 100 times. So we come here at a risk. Therefore, we should always be careful. Especially at those times when we're liable to take some kind of offense to some event in Vrindavan, Just tolerate it as another kind of blessing somehow. Okay, let's go on.
This is a kind of God, Yamuna. I'm not speaking about them. I leave that up to you to go at other times. Here's Prabhupada about the forest of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada describes the beauty of Vrindavan's forests. The forests on the shore of the Yamuna are all beautiful gardens full of trees of mango, jackfruit, apples, guavas, oranges, grapes, berries, palm fruit, and so on. And because the forest was on the bank of the Yamuna, naturally there were ducks, cranes, and peacocks on the branches of the trees. All these trees, birds, and beasts were pious living entities born in the transcendental abode of Vrindavan just to give pleasure to the Lord and his eternal associates, the cowherd boys. If we try to single on one particular feature of Vrindavan living, it's that everyone in Vrindavan, who's actually in Vrindavan consciousness, wants to please Krishna. So wherever you can develop that, that is as good as Vrindavan, even outside of India. Srila Rupa Goswami recommends that we live in Vrindavan or in your mind, wherever you are. But we have our inclination is not to do things just for Krishna, but that is the real standard, to try to seek what is pleasing to Krishna, what is pleasing to Krishna's representative. When we develop our lives like that, then we can start to know what is Vrindavan. Of course, it can't be forced. Can't do anything artificially. So in the beginning, we face those strong desires that we have that don't seem to be directly to please Krishna. And then as far as possible, we take them and use them and use their energy in the service of Krishna. Then by the expert process of bhakti, it becomes Krishna consciousness. So rather than imitate, we should use what we have and serve Krishna. Although one may complain that no kalpa vriksha, wish-fulfilling trees, exist in Vrindavan, when the Goswamis were there, the kalpa vriksha trees were present. It is not that one can simply go to such a tree and make demands. One must first be a devotee. The Goswamis would live under a tree for one night only, and the tree would satisfy all their desires. For the common man, this may seem very wonderful, but as one makes progress in devotional service, all this can be realized. You see, some of the ladies in front of us, they were touching the cows, touching the calves, touching the trees. They have some realization, or some faith at least, that everything is holy, and our wishes for devotional life can be granted by even the dust of Vrindavan. I have some other material too. Selections from a long poem called the Vrindavan Mahimamsa by Prabhananda Saraswati. This is another thing we read at with risk, because he has such strong faith in Vrindavan that he is telling us that we should go to Vrindavan at once and stay there and never leave Vrindavan. So if we read this, we may get that inclination. Think of Vrindavan with love. Roll in its dust. Love it ardently. Please its moving and non-moving residents. Worship Sri Radha's birthplace. With all your heart, take shelter of Sri Vrindavan, the best of all holy places. If someone relates to me the faults of one of the moving or non-moving residents of Vrindavan, then how is his action different from cutting me with hundreds of sharpened swords?
If one is a little bit inimical to even a single blade of grass in Vrindavan, then who will be able to rescue him from the horrible hell that awaits him? So we have a way of perceiving things which is sharpened in a certain way, living in the West, and tends to be very critical. Looks for material opulence and good organization and cleanliness and so many things that when you come here you may suffer a culture shock. This is very bad. So we have to try to soften our vision. It doesn't mean distort it, but it's part of what we want to leave behind in the West, our Western conditioning. Not to see everything in terms of lust, anger, fear, greed, and so on. So when we see the same things that might set off some agitation or anger, disgust, but when we see it here, we have to soften our hearts or allow them to become softened and understand that I am the rough one. It is I who am the element that has entered here that is not Krishna conscious, especially my mind. And these things I see can be seen with a better vision. O brother, now that you have entered the difficult to attain land of Vrindavan, which fulfills all desires, why have you allowed yourself to come under the spell of petty materialism? And why do you allow yourself to constantly roam about without entering the realm of pure love of Krishna? So he's saying several things at least. One thing he keeps saying is, now that you've come here, you shouldn't leave Vrindavan. But he's also saying that now that you're here, don't act as a nonsense person full of petty materialism roaming around without entering the realm of pure love. So our mind is roaming, it's not in Vrindavan, and we're wasting our precious pilgrimage when we don't actually stay in Vrindavan, at least in a humble, basic way, trying to pray to Krishna and Prabhupada to tell us what to do, how to act now that we're in Vrindavan, and how to form our lives. Brother, do you know for certain when you will die? Do you think the Maha Mantra will check powerful death? Do you think that death will patiently wait and allow you to die at a time you prescribe? Is it for these reasons that again and again you fearlessly leave Vrindavan? That sentence may seem strange at first. Do you think the Maha Mantra will check powerful death? What he means is we shouldn't chant thinking that because I'm chanting I'll never leave this body. But we have to leave this body, and the chanting can check death in the sense that when we die it will be auspicious. But there's nothing that will stop our death, even the fact that we're a Hare Krishna chanters. So if we want to die in Vrindavan, he's saying then you better, now that you're here, you better stay. And don't fearlessly leave Vrindavan. But if we have to leave, like Prabhupada says, on Krishna's business, then we better take Vrindavan in our hearts, so that if we die on the road, it still will be in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is wonderful. The two sweet, fair, and dark splendors named Radha and Krishna are wonderful. He who has faith in them and rises to the spiritual world is wonderful. The rare soul who understands these truths is wonderful. O Vrindavan, if I have even only once seen you, if I have even only once called out the holy names, Radha Krishna, or if I have even only once bowed before you with devotion and surrendered to you, then please, O my mother, do not ignore me. On the one hand, it's very rare that any devotee can understand Vrindavan. So we come here and we don't see. That's one side. But the other side expressed here is that even if once you can be sincere here and make a prayer, then that will not go in vain. There's great benefit just to be here and to walk in an inoffensive way. We don't have to get great realizations every day or at every step, but just don't be offensive and be faithful and take the dust of Vrindavan on your head, and it will be very wonderful for us. Okay. It's compassionate nature, which is represented by Radharani. Always pray to Radharani for Krishna's compassion. If Krishna is always attractive to everyone, and Radharani is attractive to Krishna, how can we imagine the position of Srimati Radharani? We should try humbly to understand her and offer her our obeisances, saying, Radharani, you are so dear to Krishna. You are the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, and you are Krishna's beloved. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Radharani is very dear to Krishna, and if we approach Krishna through the mercy of Radharani, we can easily attain Krishna. If Radharani recommends a devotee, Krishna immediately accepts him, however foolish he may be. In Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Krishna. Srimati Radharani is the tender-hearted form, counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling the perfectional stage of a worldly feminine nature. Therefore, the mercy of Radharani is available very readily to sincere devotees. And once Radharani recommends such a devotee to Lord Krishna, the Lord at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. Again, service to Srimati Radharani is very, very rare, very, very hard to attain. It takes many, many lifetimes. But here, Prabhupada speaks of that mercy being available very readily to sincere devotees. So, even a drop of mercy. And the mercy we want is not for relief of material pain or for liberation, but to gain that greed, that desire to serve, desire to, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, giving up my own sense of personal comforts, when will I go and preach the holy name? So in Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani is the supreme worshipable deity, even more than Krishna. And her mercy is readily available. Srimati Radharani is the center of all of Vrindavan's activities. In Vrindavan, Krishna is the instrument of Srimati Radharani. Therefore, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan still chant, Jai Radhe. From Krishna's own statement given herein, it appears that Radharani is the queen of Vrindavan and that Krishna is simply her decoration. Radharani, the symbol of the topmost bhakta, is so powerful that she has purchased Krishna. Therefore, Brajabasis take shelter of the lotus feet of Radharani, for if she recommends, oh, here is a nice devotee, Krishna must accept him. We should be more interested in worshipping Radharani, for however fallen we may be, if somehow or other we can please Radharani, we can very easily understand Krishna. Sri Krishna's sense of happiness is limited by the happiness of the gopis. Devotees at Vrindavan therefore try to serve the gopis, namely Radharani and her associates. If one gains the favor of the gopis, he easily gains the favor of Krishna. Because of the recommendation of the gopis, Krishna at once accepts the service of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya therefore wanted to please the gopis instead of Krishna. How might we, in our neophyte stage, seek the mercy of Radharani and the gopis by any of our practices or attitudes were in Vrindavan? Yes? by trying to serve the spiritual master. Yes, the mercy of Srimati Radharani comes through the representative. It'll be very difficult to ask for direct service to Radharani. Good answer. Any others? Yes. Serve the Vaishnavas. Then that's ideal behavior in Vrindavan, and then Srimati Radharani will see the way Prabhupada describes. Oh, look at this sincere devotee who's serving the Vaishnavas. Give him some mercy. So we can try to direct it specifically to Srimati Radharani by being aware that she is the queen of Vrindavan, going to see her darshan, especially Radhasham Sundar in Prabhupada's temple, Krishna Balaram, becoming aware that when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're calling on her, Hara. In this Chaitanya Charitamrita class, I'm going to give a class how the gopis are the best teachers for all devotees. And we'll point out how they exemplify so many good qualities which all devotees aspire to have. To perform devotional service means to follow in the footsteps of Radharani. And devotees in Vrindavan put themselves under the care of Radharani in order to achieve perfection in their devotional service. Well, simply coming to Vrindavan is a gesture on our part that we're putting ourselves under the care of Srimati Radharani. We haven't gone to South India to big temples of the cosmic Vishnus. We haven't gone to the Himalayas. We've come here. So that in itself is an item of faith. In other words, devotional service is not an activity of the material world. It is directly under the control of Radharani. The devotees of the Lord in the Vaikuntha planets want to see the Lord as the most beautiful, but devotees in Gokula or Krishna Loka want to see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. And let's look at the other poems. Happily picking many kinds of flowers from the trees and vines, Radha and Krishna praise the forest of Vrindavan. They bathe and sport in the lakes of Vrindavan forest, and they play with the birds and other creatures there. Who would not serve Vrindavan forest, the supreme transcendental abode? With their soft flower petal hands, Sri Radha Krishna carefully water the trees and vines from the time of their first sprouting. They nourished them and made them grow, and at the proper time married each vine to an appropriate tree. When they saw new flowers beginning to blossom, they became delighted and spoke many playful, joking words. Let us bow down and offer our respectful obeisances to these trees and vines of Vrindavan forest. O brother, you have already experienced enjoyment in the world of birth and death. See the good qualities in others, and not their faults. Do not put yourself forward, but remain obscure and unknown, and continually wander without any companion through this beautiful forest of Vrindavan. So this is the Babaji path, all alone, with no means of shelter or support. And you can't do this unless you are truly Niskinchana. So Prabhupada has made different provisions for us, but we should try to practice our version of that, certainly not seeing the faults in others and not trying to put ourselves forward, and seeking the secrets of Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, the youthful divine couple, whose complexions are dark and fair, and who are two wonderful treasure houses of beauty and other transcendental qualities, enjoy their pastimes. In that Vrindavan, all transcendental virtues are present. But to develop that desire to become the servant of Radha and Krishna, to become pure in heart and to love Vrindavan, that can be awakened by service in the Dham and by hearing potent prayers like this. I'll just read one more, then we can walk. In this beginningless world of repeated birth and death, how many times have you not suffered in hell? And how many times have you not relished pleasures that eclipse the happiness of Brahma, Indra, and the other demigods? My friend, in this one body, do not consider happiness or distress, but simply worship the supreme transcendental abode, Sri Vrindavan. Okay. When Krishna walked on the ground of Vrindavan, the marks of his soul, flag, thunderbolt, fish, gold, and lotus flower, would be imprinted upon the dust of the land. The gopis became overwhelmed simply at seeing those marks on the ground. The name of Krishna. For all living entities to be attracted towards Krishna is natural. Therefore, the Lord's real name is Krishna, he who attracts everyone and everything. The typical examples of such attraction are found in Vrindavan, where everything and everyone is attracted by Krishna. The elderly persons like Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda Devi, the friends like Sridham Subal and the other cowherd boys, the gopi ladies, Srimati Radharani and her associates, and even the birds, beasts, cows and calves are attracted. The flowers and fruits in the gardens are attracted. The waves on the Yamuna are attracted. And the land, sky, trees, plants, animals, and all other living entities are attracted by Krishna. This is the natural situation of everything in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan there are cows that fulfill all desires, kamadhenus, and their number is unlimited. They graze from forest to forest, delivering only milk. The people want nothing else. In Vrindavan the natural speech of the people sounds like music, and their natural motion resembles a dance. The water in Vrindavan is nectar, and the Brahma Jyoti effulgence, which is full of transcendental bliss, is directly perceived there in its form. I said the essence of Vrindavan was to please Krishna. And it's to please Krishna in a special way, which is most pleasing to him. And that is in intimacy, even without the reverence of thinking that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they replace the understanding that Krishna is Bhagavan with something very, very rare in spiritual life, and that is exclusive love for Krishna. So simply, the atheist also doesn't think Krishna is Bhagavan, but he thinks himself the center. But the devotees of Vrindavan, they also have Bhagavan consciousness. Just like in Vrindavan, there's all the opulence of Vaikuntha in terms of palaces and jewels and ornaments and power, but it's covered over by the sweet exchanges of Krishna and the devotees. So also the concept that Krishna is Bhagavan is there. And Krishna manifests it sometimes by lifting the Govardhan hill or killing Putana. Or the devotees show their knowledge that Krishna is Bhagavan by turning to him and saying, Krishna, please save us from the forest fire. But it's mostly a background to the love in their relationships or rasas. The cowherd boys do not know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for that is the nature of Brajalila, Krishna's pastimes in the village of Vrindavan. Not knowing Krishna's identity, the cowherd boys simply love Krishna, and their love is unending. This is true of everyone in Vrindavan. For example, Yashoda and Nanda love Krishna with parental affection. Similarly, Krishna's friends love Krishna, Krishna's girlfriends love Krishna, the trees love Krishna, the water loves Krishna, the flowers, the cows, the calves, everyone loves Krishna. That is the nature of Vrindavan. So if we simply learn how to love Krishna, we can immediately transform this world into Vrindavan. So I'll ask a similar question when we read about how we should approach Srimati Radharani and the gopis. I asked, how can we actually do that? So since we're in this line of Vrindavan Vasi, following the path of Rupa Goswami to love Krishna in his form as a cowherd boy, how can we actually enact that if we don't actually have the full qualification to see Krishna as our pal, or as our lover, or as our son? What, how does it have any meaning to us at the present? Some answers?
Goal.
What?
It's like goal. You can try to reach the goal. Doesn't mean that they are there.
But I'm asking, what are some activities of acting and trying to reach the goal? Yes?
You can try to hear about it. The goal is to have it.
Yes, so again, we're we've come to Vrindavan, not the Himalayas, and when we sit to read, we don't read about the Nirvishesha Brahman or about the Paramatma, but we read either direct pastimes about this love or an analysis about it from the right source. So everything begins with Shravanam. The more we hear these kind of pastimes about Krishna, we'll be inclined to this rather than to the worship in Vaikuntha. So by hearing, we can become attracted to the way the boys play with Krishna instead of worshipping him like the four Kumaras. Rather, they wrestle with him. And how the gopis joke with Krishna rather than just bow down to him like the Lakshmis. And how the parents of Krishna even chastise him. Hearing about it. What else can we practice?
Praying.
Praying to understand that way.
Serving the deity.
Serving the deity. And which deity? We serve either Krishna Balaram or Gaur Nitai or Radhasham. Of course, we may serve the deity with awe and reverence because we don't have more qualification. But still, we decorate him as Krishna with his flute and put flowers in Srimati Radharani's hand. We observe Radhastami and Gopuj, Govardhan Puj, all these things which are about this Vrindavan Rasa. Not so much the other worship, although, so that would be another example. Observance of Vaishnava holidays. Sometimes for preaching we may observe the holidays of Lord Rama or something with more awe and opulence. But actually the days that are dear to us are Janmashtami, Radhashtami, and Srila Prabhupada's days and days of great acharyas and so on, Vaishnava acharyas.
Thank you.
this is the places where their activities were performed.
Yes. In Back to Godhead magazine, Jai Dwaita Maharaj was planning for the next year and in the future what he wants to put in. He said, we will continue to do visits to the Tirthas, like we're doing. So he asked for any suggestions, and I suggested, I said, I don't know how long you'll be able to keep finding all these Vaishnava Tirthas, someplace in Rajasthan, someplace in South India, and keep finding these places. But actually, you could just run many features on Vrindavan, on Braj Mandala Parikram. You could do 1 month Sanket, 1 month Raval, 1 month Barshana, rather than go here and there, where sometimes the worshipful deity is not so much in our line or in our mood. So, we can visit the places where these, because Vrindavan is really, it's almost, I won't say amusing, but it's charming, that the names, the different names of the places, there's so many places, and they all have to do with very intimate places, like Seva Kunj, this is where Krishna served Radharani, and there's one place I went recently with Govardhan Hill with Burijan, and then he said we would meet at Lota Baba. So I said, what is Lota Baba? And then he told me that here there was a Baba, a man who, he was stopping Krishna when Krishna was leaving Vrindavan for Mathura, and he was piteously asking Krishna not to leave, and Krishna said to him, you wait, I'll be back. Just wait, I'll be back in it very shortly. And so he, now there's a temple there where that Baba was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then there's the place, Uddhava Chiri, where Uddhava prayed to become the blade of grass. So all the places are so intensely in this mood, not otherwise, as with some of the other tirthas, which signify pastimes outside of Vrindavan. So at first it may seem that we can enter this mood, but even in our Vaidhi Sadhana is quite juicy. To go on the order of the Guru to all these places and hear about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna there. Any other good ideas for how to do this? Yes?
We can pray to those devotees who are in that mood. We can pray to, and in our temple, we can pray to the Lita and Vishakha that we want to. We want to, at some stage, join our spiritual master in serving Srimati Radharani and Lord Krishna, and asking for their help to be able to do that.
Pray to the associates of Krishna in Vrindavan. All right, and we can walk on this parikram. So let's go some more.
So when Lord Chaitanya visited Vrindavan, he stayed under this tree. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, his visit there is not described that he stayed there very long. And yet, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that when he was outside of Vrindavan, just by hearing the name of Vrindavan, his ecstasy would be increased many, many times. Then when he was starting on the way to Vrindavan, it increased more and more. And when he entered Vrindavan, it was unlimitedly increased. In fact, that's one of the reasons why he didn't stay long. His ecstasies became so uncontrollable that he was throwing himself in the Yamuna, and the devotees were becoming very worried about him. They wanted to take him out. And Lord Chaitanya agreed to stay. Actually, when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he started for Vrindavan immediately, indicating that Vaishnava sannyas is for worshipping Krishna in Vrindavan. And but he was in such ecstasy that he didn't even have his bearings externally, and he just wandered around for a while, for 3 days. Then what happened to him? Someone say.
he came to Gandhi and Nityananda Prabhu said that this is
extremely. Yeah, he was misled by Lord Nityananda to thinking that he had come to Vrindavan. Actually, his Lord Chaitanya's devotees kept him in different ways from going to Vrindavan because they didn't want him to leave Jagannath Puri. And of course, he went to Jagannath Puri to follow the desire of his mother, that he not be too far away. But it didn't matter. Wherever he was, as Advaitacharya said at that time, this is Vrindavan. That when he was trying to go to Vrindavan and they tricked him, and they said, this is the Yamuna, the Ganges, you're in Vrindavan. Then he understood later that this is not Vrindavan, what have you done? And Advaitacharya said, wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. And even in Jagannath Puri, he saw the ocean as the Yamuna, he saw a sand dune as the Govardhan Hill in a garden. He smelled the aroma and of Krishna's form and saw Krishna there. When he saw the Jagannath deities, he saw Krishna with a flute as the son of Nanda. So, what is the question of being in Vrindavan or not being in Vrindavan? He was always in Vrindavan in the mood of Srimati Radharani. But his pastimes in Vrindavan are very special. When Prabhupada was explaining that 1967 to the Hayagriva about how to put on a play about Lord Chaitanya, he told that one scene you can have Lord Chaitanya come to Vrindavan. And Hayagriva didn't know anything, and not knowing the philosophy yet. So he was asking Prabhupada different questions which are humorous to us now. So Prabhupada was saying, then when Lord Chaitanya came to Vrindavan, all the animals were coming up to him and licking him. He said, and the birds and the trees, everyone was greeting him, just like old friends. So Hayagriva said, why were they all coming forward to him as old friends? And then Prabhupada may have said something else, but then he realized, he said, oh, he's Krishna. So actually that's it. The Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. So when he comes back to Vrindavan, they're all greeting their old friend, Krishna. They know he's Krishna. And they're coming up to him in affection. Where? It says in Lord Shiva. It's not about Lord Chaitanya in Vrindavan. It's about Lord Shiva. Isn't there another one?
In the other reference, that's the only two references.
Aside from his visit, he was always thinking of Vrindavan. At the Ratha Yatra in Puri, he was thinking in the mood of Srimati Radharani and the gopis trying to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. And in the Gambira, his private room or cell in Jagannath Puri, he entered deeply and deeply into that mood of separation, crying and reciting verses, sometimes chastising Krishna for leaving them in Vrindavan. Therefore, for ourselves, it's very nice to be in Vrindavan and see some direct tirtha connected to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's being here. They're both leelas. The Lord Chaitanya's leela is more accessible. It happened more recently. It's more like ISKCON. Devotees and sannyasis and chanting and feasting and preaching and being all about Krishna in Vrindavan. So this is a very good combination for us. The more we can enter Lord Chaitanya Leela, we come out as in Krishna Leela. There's some saying that if you take a dip in the Ganges in Navadvip of the Leela of Lord Chaitanya, you go down deep enough, you come up in Radhakund. So they are inseparable. This is a special place. What are some other places in Vrindavan, or some other things in Vrindavan that remind you of Lord Chaitanya in this mood? Imlital? Yeah, there are even verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Imlital, and those verses are inscribed on some stones in Imlital, that Lord Chaitanya used to chant his japa there in the morning. He didn't like so many crowds, so he would chant alone, and then at noon, afternoon, he would seat people and tell them about the glories of the holy name. But it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he liked Imlital because it has a nice scenic view and there are nice breezes coming from the Yamuna, even today. What other places? Yeah. In Radhakund, there's also a sitting place of Lord Chaitanya. We go there at the end of our circumambulation and ask to be relieved of offenses. Of course, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he went all over India and installed footprints of Mahaprabhu. So there are many places, but these Vrindavan places are special. Any other places or reminders? Of course, in Krishna Balaram Mandir, there's a focus on Gaur Nithai as being not different than Krishna and Balaram. That's one of the messages Prabhupada wanted to send out by that temple and the installation of Gaur Nithai and Krishna Balaram. So we worship Gaur Nithai there and understand that Krishna and Balaram, who played in Ramanretti, they came again as Gaur and Nithai and spread the bliss of Vrindavan through the chanting of the holy name and talking about Krishna. Yare deke tare kaha Krishna upadesh. All right, I think we better go on now. Thank you. Hare Bol. Spiritual initiation in this life. Many Brajavasis have deep attachment and spontaneous attraction to Radha and Krishna. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan are Vaishnavas. They are all auspicious because somehow or other they always chant the holy name of Krishna. Even though some of them do not strictly follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, on the whole they are devotees of Krishna and chant his name directly or indirectly, purposely or without purpose, even when they pass on the street. They are fortunate enough to exchange greetings by saying the name of Radha or Krishna. Thus, directly or indirectly, they are auspicious. The inhabitants of Vrindavan do not know anything but the worship of Radha and Krishna. So that's true even today. And people who may seem to be not very morally advanced or scripturally aware, still, they know Radha and Krishna from their birth as worshipable. The people in Vrindavan don't need a spiritual master. Krishna is their spiritual master. When a disciple asked for clarification on this statement, Srila Prabhupada replied, "Yes, they have an excellent spiritual master, but you may have a spiritual master and not obey him. Then what is his position? So they are fallen who do nonsense things in Vrindavan. But their fortune is also there. They are born in Vrindavan." And then Prabhupada says that people who live in Vrindavan and make some outward show of being sadhu or like that, but actually inwardly are even sinful, then what happens to them next life? They take birth in Vrindavan again, but as an animal. A hog or dog in Vrindavan. Due to the reactions of their sinful activities, they receive an animal's body, but due to the touch of the dust of Vrindavan, they become free of all sinful activities and get liberated. These hogs and dogs are also very important. They are not ordinary. To get the body of a hog or dog means they are being purified. Without being purified, no one can enter the kingdom of God. when Jagadananda Pandit wanted to go to Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya gave him some concise instructions how to behave there, which we can keep in mind. The residents, this is what he said, the residents of Vrindavan and Mathura are devotees of Krishna in parental affection. Devotees on the platform of Vidhimarg may misunderstand the activities of those on the platform of Ragamarg. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Jagadananda Pandit to remain apart from the residents of Vrindavan, who were spontaneous devotees, so as not to become disrespectful toward them. So even if we don't take it that every person in Vrindavan is on the platform of Raganuga, but still they have something that we don't have, and we should allow them to be who they are without coming too close and criticizing them. Materialists consider Vrindavan Dham an unclean city because there are many monkeys and dogs there, and along the bank of the Yamuna there is refuse. Some time ago, a materialistic man asked me, "Why are you living in Vrindavan? Why have you selected such a dirty place to live after retiring?" Such a person cannot understand that Vrindavan Dham is always a representative of the original Vrindavan Dham. In his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur advises that one avoid remaining in Vrindavan for a very long time. As the saying goes, familiarity breeds contempt. If one stays in Vrindavan for many days, he may fail to maintain proper respect for its inhabitants. Therefore, those who have not attained the stage of spontaneous love for Krishna should not live in Vrindavan very long. It is better for them to make short visits. Anyone have any questions? Give me that other thing. Even if the residents of Vrindavan are violent hoodlums in disguise, or thieves who plunder one's money and wife, still, they who are learned and saintly do not see any fault in them. O Vrindavan, how can there be any auspiciousness for one who does not always praise you with his voice? What person who knows the truth will not take shelter of a blade of grass that grows within you? There's a similar verse by Raghunath Das Goswami that even if the residents of Vrindavan, they fill my ears with all kinds of gossip and nonsense talk, prajalpa, still I would rather leave here than go somewhere else where there and associate with some great devotees of the Lord who are in a different mood. Simply bow down to offer respects to the cottages and the groves of Vrindavan, and you will find the wonderful treasure contained in the nectar oceans of pure love of Krishna. I was thinking, when we're on parikram, it's like we physically, you do something physically that you can't do just mentally. When Prabhupada in 1966, he went into Tompkins Square Park and sat down, and devotees came and chanted, and all the people of that neighborhood came around. Then later, in one appreciation of that act by Prabhupada, Allen Ginsberg said, "I thought it was wonderful how he came here with the devotees, and they put their bodies on the line and actually came and did it. Such a democratic act that everyone could join them also. So to actually do something fit with your body is a more of a commitment than just to do it with the mind. You do it with your senses. So I was thinking, when we're walking on the parikram, it's like we physically enter, or we physically exit a different kind of consciousness or a different world and enter the spiritual realm. Something that you talk about and imagine you actually do, and you can experience it. Sometimes we read in fairy tales, like someone, there's like a cave, or there's some passage in the forest, and somebody enters it, and then all of a sudden he comes upon some completely different world where there are all people there and everything. And no one knows how he got there or how to come back either. So it's kind of like that. You come out, you go out of these three dimensions, and you enter another dimension, Turiya, where there's love of Krishna, and you can forget all your material problems, all the petty things, and everything becomes natural. That you're in Krishna's pastimes, and you can talk about Radha and Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, and it all has meaning and significance. He says here, when will I happily and indifferent to everything, my heart unshaken by millions of praises and rebukes, worship Radha's lover in the land of Vrindavan? So we're no longer looking for praises, or we don't care about rebukes. That's what I mean by leaving that behind. You may have been thinking, oh, there's this issue, there's this intrigue, there's that intrigue, and all of a sudden, you're not there anymore, you're in the new dimension. So parikram can do this. Enter the secret world. What nonsense, what nonsense, what misfortune. Even though he is a, quote, great man, unquote, he still does not like blissful Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya's feet are far away. Powerful Kali has appeared. How will love for Krishna be attained without love for Vrindavan? What can I do? I am a madman. I will just say this. Knowledge, devotion, renunciation, and all other virtues are worthless without Vrindavan. So Vrindavan is physically manifest. Other things may be hard to see or to realize. They happened so long ago. But that the land is still here. Who can deny it? We're actually here in Krishna's abode. So it's very powerful for us to be able to do that. If fools see defects in this inconceivably glorious earthly Vrindavan, where everything is effulgent, then what can the wise, who have the eyes to see, say to enlighten them? If I could smell your sweet fragrance with millions of nostrils, O supremely blissful Vrindavan, and see the splendor of your moving and non-moving residence with millions of eyes, if I could hear your noble virtues with millions of ears and wander through you with millions of feet and bow down to offer respects to you with many millions of heads and hands, I would still not be satisfied. I think the ultimate goal of life is to attain even a small amount of love for the land of Vrindavan. O Vrindavan, I am now very fortunate. I have become the object of your very, very great mercy. You have given me the right to reside within your boundaries. A right that is prayed for by Lord Brahma, Shukadeva Goswami, Sanat Kumar, and other great souls. This gift gives me the hope that someday I will directly serve the splendid, charming, eternally youthful, dark, amorous, fair, and dark divine couple. If we ignore Vrindavan, which is flooded with the nectar of Radha's lotus feet, and filled with the bliss of love for Lord Hari's feet, then what are the other things we will talk about? He's posing all these questions. What will we talk about if we don't talk about Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan? Something unworthy. So why not talk about this? I meditate on the most fortunate persons who, even though they commit offenses, place Sri Sri Radhika's feet in their hearts and live in Vrindavan. Brother, are you trapped in the jungle of repeated births and deaths? Can you find not even a moment's relief from the threefold sufferings? The words of the scriptures don't tell you how to escape. Simply meditate on the trees of Vrindavan, which are so dear to Lord Krishna. Friend, why are you morose? What is the need for this useless talking? Simply hear and glorify the transcendental qualities of Vrindavan. Why are you suffocated by thousands of useless concerns for public opinion and the niceties of religious practice? Simply place your body in the beautiful land of Vrindavan and become happy. So his whole religion is simply Vrindavan. It's become boiled down to that. I don't need anything else. I don't need scriptural injunctions. I don't need this. I don't need that. All I need is Vrindavan, Vrindavan's mercy, just to live here. Never flaunting your own virtues, bow down and serve all living entities in Vrindavan. May my peaceful composure be stolen away by the youthful beauty of the golden complexioned goddess, Sri Radha. A person who even once tastes in his heart Vrindavan's sweetness looks like a madman. The ground here is only the ground. The water is only water. The trees and vines are only trees and vines. The moonlight is only moonlight. The birds, beasts, and humans are only birds, beasts, and humans. The deity of Krishna, it's only a deity of Krishna, the enemy of the demons. The deity of Sri Radhika is only a deity of Sri Radhika. Enough with this nonsense. I pray that I may be able to directly see the reality that everything in Vrindavan is spiritual and transcendental. I pray that Sri Vrindavan will accept me, even though I am pathetic, wicked-hearted, and ill-behaved. O Mother Vrindavan, O Mother overflowing with love, please place on your lap this mischievous child who has been playing in the dirt. Mercifully forgive his offenses, wipe the dust from him, feed him the breast milk of transcendental love for your master and mistress, and give him all protection. O Vrindavan, if I am not able to attain the nectar in you, then I should spend millions of lifetimes performing austerities to attain it. Take me to Vrindavan. I will pass my entire life there, placing myself at the feet of the great souls who are the crest jewels of all saints, and from whose mouths flow the nectar stream of the sweet transcendental pastimes of the dear lover of Sri Radha. Now, Prabhananda Saraswati says, the great souls who drink the nectar flowing in Vrindavan have left us. Now we are dead and can associate only with their names. They who became overwhelmed with prema when they saw the gunja berries in Vrindavan, who muddied the ground with their tears, have abandoned the world in Kali Yuga and attained Radha Krishna's lotus feet. Now we are left only with persons like ourselves. Now our hearts have become withered, dry, and we are no longer able to maintain our lives. Even today, affectionate Lord Krishna enjoys the very sweet nectar of transcendental pastimes there, herding the cows with his brother and his many dear friends. A wonderful sweetness becomes manifest in the hearts of those who understand the nectar of this place, O Braja, which is more dear even than the city of Mathura. I take shelter. As long as there is no deep faith in the land of Vrindavan, the mercy of Sri Radha's feet does not appear. If one hears the singing of the birds in Vrindavan, then what is the use to him of all the Vedas? If one recites the names of the trees and other living entities in Vrindavan, then what is the use to him of a host of prayers and mantras? So just what you might call ordinary natural living in Vrindavan is still spiritual and better than any other religious study. Fools think the moving and non-moving creatures in blissful spiritual Vrindavan are conditioned souls bound by the modes of nature. We say they are worshipable for everyone, and they are the two sources of the nectar treasure of pure devotional service to Sri Radha Muralidhar. Cut the great ropes of misplaced hope, leave the poison forest of sense gratification, and fly, O bird of my heart, to the nectar forest of Vrindavan. O Sri Vrindavan, I think an insignificant dog who lives in your realm to be fortunate. He who takes Vrindavan very seriously is taken seriously by all the demigods. He who takes Vrindavan lightly becomes as insignificant as a blade of grass. Defects in Vrindavan are not defects. To see them is ignorance. To see suffering, decay, or other defects in Vrindavan is an illusion, a great illusion. So, of course, he's very elevated. We cannot imitate his faith, but it's astonishing to hear it, his faith and his realization of the inner meaning of Vrindavan. And at least we can not be offensive and take Vrindavan lightly. We can be foolish, but still be earnest about trying to get the mercy of Vrindavan. All right, we can walk the last bit. And we can pray now. If I was saying in the beginning, we should, while we're here in Vrindavan, try to get some bearing on what we should do to please Prabhupada and Krishna. And then, when you get some hint of it, then you try to give it practical shape. So, pray to Krishna to tell you what to do, how to improve yourself, and how to bring it about. The Parikrama has given us a good opportunity to chant also. Can remember how it was nice to chant and walk, and keep that in mind as we chant always. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.